session number 30403, Mr. Andre Codin, Reel 5. Now, what happened after the war broke out? You were at the farm school at Wallingford in Oxfordshire.
Yes, yes.
What happened after the war broke out? How did that affect your life?
Well, I was actually sent away from the farm school. That is, I've got to explain that to you. A group of Harley Street paediatricians and psychologists formed a committee. It was called the Q Committee, right? And this is an English thing and had nothing to do with us. But and they financed a head of a Borstal Institute who was sacked by the government because of his too progressive methods, the way he dealt with the Borstal lads, right? And they financed for him, and they established, they bought a farm near Saffron Walden in Essex, and they financed him, and he got young adolescents. Well, they were actually in the age between 18 and 20 odd, right? And he got them onto this farm, and he looked after them, right? And tried to re-educate them, etc. The government, the Home Office, gave him the sack, you see. One of the doctors from this committee was a Jewish lady, and I don't know how she got hold of me, but I was sent to her, and she sent me to that farm. And the man who ran it, who was a former Borstal headmaster or whatever they call them. He was a Quaker, and he ran it with his wife, and they were two of the most beautiful people.
Now, what was this farm called? Did it have a name?
No, it didn't have a name. It was just near Saffron Walden, and it was and the man who ran it. He was an ex-Borstal head. His name was David Wills, and his wife was Ruth. And they were very, very kind. And he wasn't the only one. There was another one who was also a big fat man, Charlie Bodsworth. He used to be also a head of a children's establishment, also children with, with juvenile delinquency, etc., right? And he worked there also. And there was another one chap there, I forgot his name. And I was sent there.
Now, was this because they considered you a bit of a juvenile delinquent at the time?
I was too rebellious, right? With this affair with the football thing, right? So they said, oh, well, no, we can't have him.
Do you know what month you went there? Was it in September, just after the war, or was it a bit later?
Oh, it was after the war was declared, yes.
But
you
don't know when, which month?
No, I know it was bloody cold. And
now, you got on well with the staff at this institution, at the farm.
Oh, yes, yes. As a matter of fact, the head of the place, well, I'll come to that, and his wife, they always invited me to because they had their own little place, you see. They always invited me, and he gave me access to his library, to his books. And but then what happened, as the war went on, after the outbreak of the war, this whole thing was dissolved. And I don't know how it happened, but what happened that in there a place near Oxford called Rushden, right? There was a workhouse there, a Victorian workhouse. Now, I don't know who got it. You must forgive me that I do not know. But what happened, we moved from Saffron Walden to Rushden, to this workhouse. And then about 20 to 30 young delinquents were evacuated from London, from some Borstal institutes in the vicinity of London, and they were sent to Rushden, and they were put into that workhouse under the supervision of David and his wife. And he took me with him. And I helped looking after the kids, and I was very successful and very popular. I taught them play football, and then I said, don't you want to learn another language? You know, I interested them in learning things. I gave them lectures in history and geography, and so they were all, you know, they really liked me. And I got on very well with them.
Did they were delinquents. Did they behave well?
Well, when they first came, they continued in the same way. But I'll give you an example. For example, the method David used. One of the lads broke a window just out of hooliganism, yet. Well, when David found out about it, he took the lad along and he said, now show me, where's your bed in the dormitory upstairs, right?
You.
Well, David picked up a stone like the lad had done, and he smashed the window just where the lad's bed was. Right? And it was bloody cold. And then he left the lad. He said, you see, how do you like to sleep next to a smashed window? Right? And he didn't repair it till two days afterwards. And that lad never smashed a window again. Right? But most of the lads, some of the children that were with some of them had caused all sorts of trouble, you know. I looked through their records, and some really, really nasty little lads there. But it's amazing the way they, under the guidance of this man, David, and his wife, Ruth, and my assistance, if I may say so, that these lads changed.
Now, how long were you doing that for?
Pardon?
How long did you do that for?
Well, what happened was David was very impressed with my intellectual ability. And he got me an interview, actually, with Ruskin College. He was trying to get me a scholarship there, right, in Oxford. And what transpired was that they were not able to give me a full scholarship, and David approached the refugee committee in London to make up the rest. And they said, we got to use the money we got to use to more urgent things. And I didn't. And I didn't get the scholarship to Ruskin College. Right? And I was very sad about that, and very disappointed, and very bitter. But what unfortunately then happened, and I'm not quite sure about the times, is that David left and took a position in Edinburgh with his wife. He wanted me to come with him. Now, we had a lot of trouble in Rushden at the workhouse because the local police superintendent is a nutcase. And he knew, because I had to register, you know, as an alien. Right? You know, you had an alien registration book. And he was nuts. He came up all the time and he got they got information that I was doing light signals at night because I gave it the wrong name. It wasn't Rushden. It was Bicester.
Bicester.
Bicester near Oxford, where that workhouse was.
I thought Rushden was Northamptonshire. Yeah.
No, it wasn't Rushden. I don't know how I came to make that mistake. It was Bicester. And I tell you why, because I was stationed in Rushden, and I used to go down to Oxford because a friend of mine left all my documents with him, and I used to go down to
him. Now, you were a suspected spy then?
That's right.
And how did, I mean, there was no truth in it, so how did they investigate the incident?
He came to the workhouse, and he wanted to see me. Right? Because he had information that I was showing signals. Because near Bicester, there were a lot of airfields. And so during the bombing raids, you know, they were attacked by the Germans. Right? And now David wouldn't have none of it. He said, I won't let you muck the lad about. And he wouldn't let him in. And he gave him a real telling off. Right? David, you know, he had a certain amount of presence, you know, and he was a very intelligent man, etc. And he didn't suffer fools gladly. So he got rid of him about three or four times. What happened then, and I don't know the reason why. I do not know. He didn't tell me. Don't know. But he had to leave. And he told me he was going to Edinburgh. He was taking over a children's home in Edinburgh. And he wanted me to come with him. But I just couldn't do it like that. I had to get permission from the refugee committee and all the rest of it. No, it was a thing. And when he was up in Edinburgh, then another man, a man and his wife came and took over. They were very nice, and they were very nice to me, but they were nothing compared to David and Ruth, you know. And David wrote me a letter from Edinburgh, and he told me, Andy, come up here. I knew you would like it. They're very nice people up here, the Scots. One thing, remember, the police here, they're not like the idiots down at Bicester. I've spoken to the police. He wrote to me and told them the experience you had down in Bicester and how they would... Because what you had to do, you had to... register with the police with the place where you're going to, and deregister in the place where you were. You know, they kept a tap on you all the way through. You know, and he said, "Do come," and his wife wrote also a note and said, "Andy, we are sure you'll feel happy here." And the chap who was in charge. The new chap who replaced David, I showed him the letter. I said, well, you know, I may have to leave. And he talked me out of it. He said, you don't know what you're letting yourself into. You're just going into the blank, you know. I know you like David and you got on well with him and his wife and all the rest of it. But this is Scotland. And you don't know what you're going to be like that up there. Right? And foolishly, and I regret it ever since, because they started to be very nice to me. Right? And in addition to that, to tell you the truth, the main reason was we had a lady there working in the workhouse as a cook, and she had a daughter, and her name was Phyllis. And Phyllis made eyes at me, and I returned her looks, and quite honestly, it was her that made me stay.
How long did you stay in, or what happened next in Bicester then?
Well, what happened next was that the refugee committee, they, for some reason, I do not know the reasons why, they closed, they cut off the connection between the refugee committee and this home and the organization that ran that home, right? And they took me, they sent me up to, there's a Jewish organization which is called ORT, O-R-T. And what they do, they have homes and establishments, and they use a lot of their funds where they teach children, Jewish children, trades, you know. And they had a place in Leeds where they taught, you know, there were workshops there with where they taught children metal trades, right? And they had half a dozen metal lathes there. They taught the children how to work the lathe, etc. And me, having been a mechanic, they said, well, we'll send them up there.
Now, when was that? When about did you go that? Was that 39 or 40?
No, that was 40. That was 40. And they sent me up there. Right? Now, the children slept in there. You know, they were accommodated there.
What was it, an old mill or what was it?
No, it was a factory.
A factory, yeah.
Factory. And we slept in there, and there were instructors there. Most of the instructors themselves were refugee tradesmen. I mean, the bloke who took me, supervised me on the metal lathe, he was a mechanic from Berlin, a Jewish chap. And I stayed there for a while.
What were you learning? Just metalwork, or were you learning?
Metalwork, yeah. Well, working with the lathe and doing all sorts of metalwork and
training as a fitter.
Yeah. But unfortunately, what happened there was the man in charge, or shall we say, a sort of supervisory do-gooder, was a Jewish colonel. A Colonel Levi. And what we did, apart from doing this training in the factory, we also helped in the home, you know, cleaning, etc., and all the rest of it, because they tried to save money, right? And this colonel, he upset me very badly. And because the way he spoke to the children, he used to come in, and we were sitting around near the kitchen and peeling potatoes in the evening for the next day's cooking and that sort of thing. And he came in and he started yelling at us for no reason whatsoever. We were talking to each other, you know, like half a dozen kids sit and peel potatoes. They don't keep mum. They talk, laugh, joke, etc. And he came in and started telling us off and all the rest. And that repeated itself. He couldn't say a nice, kind word to us until I lost my temper, and I got up, and I walked after. He was going out, and I got up. I walked after him, and I told him, And I really lost my temper. I do remember what I said, approximately. I told him, I said, look, these are children. They lost their families in the most cruel circumstances. They don't know what happened to them. They've got nobody. We are friends with each other. We are trying to console each other. And what they need is a hand, a kind arm on the shoulder, not being yelled at. And you know what you do? And that really upset him. I said, you behave like an SA man. You yell at them, you shout at them, and they need a kind word. Right? And he got really upset, you know, taking that from a bloody youngster there. You know? And he was bloody cheeky and that. So what happened? He sent me back. You know, he said, you go out there, you know. And I walked, you know, he told me to get back and get on with the peeling of the potatoes. So I got back in there and I and the lads congratulated me, you know, and said, good lad, you know. You should have told him that before, you know. We waited too long for it. And so, but what happened 2 days later, I was called into the office, presented to two gentlemen in raincoats. They sat down and they told me to sit down, and they said they were from the CID. Now, if that was true or not, I do not know. But and then they said they've come to interview me and to warn me. They said if I don't change my ways, I'll cut it short. They used all sorts of threats and language. I would be sent back to Germany. Now this is the war was on, and they told me that. Well, the very fact that they uttered such a threat, although you know I perceived that it was an impossibility during the war. The Germans won't wait with open arms for me. And I was utterly disgusted. And they warned me, and then they got up and they walked out, and I heard them outside with the colonel. Now, when I looked back on it, I could see they were two friends of his. I don't know if they really were CID men or if they were just pretending it, but he was trying to, you know, frighten me and threaten so. But what I did, now that happened on a Saturday, right, that these two blokes came. And, well, what I did, it was late in the afternoon. What I did, I went back to my room, and I came to this country with a little suitcase that size here. You know, like an Apache case. But it was made out of, not leather, but imitation, you know, like cardboard, you know, but it had a sort of leather finish, right? And I put my little bits and pieces in there, you know, my pants and my toothbrush and my shaver and whatnot, and I went out. I left the place. And where I went to was because it was another cheeky thing I did once. I went to a town hall dance once in Leeds, Leeds Town Hall. And a young lady was intrigued by the way I waltzed. And she came and asked me to dance. You know, there was a ladies' request thing. And we started talking. I told her where I was from, etc. Now, she was a young Quaker lady. And she gave me her address. She had a car. And several Sundays after that, she came and collected me and took me home and gave me a meal. And we spoke and spoke. Then she took me back to the home again. Now, nobody knew that in the home of the supervisors or of the you know, it was done hush hush. And what I did, she was the only person I knew, I went there. And I told her the story. Well, what it is, I actually found I was very lucky. She was just getting dressed with a friend of hers, and they were making themselves up. They were going to go to a party. And I told her the story. And she was also working for the Quaker refugee organization. And she said to her friend, well, we'll have to put it off a bit. I've got to see to the lad. And she said, all right, come along. She took me in the car and she drove me to a hostel. Now, that hostel was a hostel for non-Jewish refugees, because what you had, quite a number of the refugees who came over were not of a Jewish religious confession, right? But they were Christian, but not recognized as Aryans, right? And the Quakers helped to get these children over. And this hostel was for non-Jewish refugees run by the Quakers.
And it was in Leeds as well?
In Leeds.
And this is still 1940?
Yes, this is still there. Beginning, it was winter. And she put me in there. She found, she spoke to the hostel manager and... luckily enough, they had a bed, but they had it in the loft somewhere, and they brought it down, and there was a room which was occupied by a Czech Christian who had been brought over by the Quakers also from Czechoslovakia, right, after the Germans occupied it. And they managed to put the bed in there. He wasn't very pleased about it, as I found out later, for one very personal reason. And they put me in there to share that room with him. And I stayed there. Right? Now, there were only about half a dozen girls there. There were no boys there. Children, I mean. There were girls there, they were about 15, 16, 17 years old. There were about half a dozen of them there. They were also all Christian children, but not 100% Aryan, right? And, but with the time, and later I found out the reason, the chap who shared the room with me, he picked quarrels with me all the time, for no reason whatsoever. You see, what happened, I used to go out, because I used to go to this town hall and dance with that Quaker lady. And when I used to come back, the wife of the hostel manager, she kept my food. And I took it to my room and ate it there, right? And he picked all sorts of quarrels with me. Later on, I found out why. He wanted to get rid of me because... he had a lady, also from Czechoslovakia, who lived in another place, in Leeds, and he wanted to get her in there. And by getting rid of me and already having a bed there, he would have been okay. Whereas before, there was no chance because they hadn't catered for somebody else to share the room with him. And till one day, he came. I was eating my food there, and he came in, and he picked actual physical fight with me, and I was sitting on my bed with a plate on my knees eating, and I said, and his name was Janusz, that's the first name, you know, it's a Czech name. I said, Janusz, why don't you go to hell, leave me alone, I'm not doing anything to you, I come here, I sleep, I get up in the morning, I get out. What is it you want? Why do you pick a fight on me? And he actually threw a punch at me. And I was sitting on the bed, and I got hold of his knees, and I picked him up and I threw him over. And now this whole thing was arranged with the manager of the hostel, because when he started yelling, and his body falling against a cupboard made a hell of a row, and suddenly the manager comes in. The door opens automatically, you know, quickly.